Hello and welcome to the Paramex Guide to the Galaxy. My name is Nicholas Jackson and today I have with me Patrick Gazevich. Today, Patrick and I are going to bring you into the K-hole.
Yep, we're going to be talking about Cat Valium, Cat Tranquilizer, K, Special K, Super K, Vitamin K, Kit Kat Purple Jet, or otherwise known as ketamine.
The main goals today are going to be discussing the drug profile, the different dosing, the ketamine continuum, because it's not just like a one size fits all. You got to think about what you're doing. And then we'll, you know, share a little bit about our own experiences with ketamine,
which are few, but still it's a new drug to both states we work in. And it should at least we've hopefully gone over some good information by the end for you, and you feel a little more comfortable with it.
Yeah. We just want everyone to be in a big, happy K-hole.
Yeah, we do.
We might just say everyone should do 500 milligrams of ketamine.
Whatever.
It's fine.
Throw it in there.
Yeah. All right. Let's jump right into it. So, ketamine. We just got this year in Maine. You got it in Mass recently,
yeah,
too, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, in our new protocol update, we got it in Mass. Not all the trucks have it yet, but we do have it.
So ketamine has been hitting the pre-hospital setting for a while now, but is now clinically relevant to us because we can give it.
Fantastic.
So what is ketamine other than Cat Valium?
Ketamine is a non-barbiturate anesthetic, analgesic, dissociative, all sorts of fun stuff. And it has a number of uses. I would say it's probably one of the more multi-purpose medications that we carry in our drug box.
Yeah, the pharmacology of ketamine, it does a couple of interesting things. It is kind of in its own class where it's not so much an anesthetic. It is an anesthetic, but it's a disassociative. So
right.
It's literally your brain and your body are no longer talking to each other.
Right.
It is classified as a NMDA blocker. Mm-hmm. So, and its cousin is actually PCP.
Rock on.
Which is part of the reason it's also nicknamed Cat Valium and Cat Tranquilizer,
and why it's popular as a party drug.
Yeah.
The one interesting thing I think about ketamine too that's worth noting is that the dissociative effect is not just mind from body, but also prevents the mind from creating associations and memories, which is why we actually get that anesthetic or get the sedative qualities, even though it's not a strict sedative in and of itself.
Correct. Yeah. So one thing I really like. So one thing that when we got our education from the state, they were like, give this dose for this and this dose for this. Don't do this dose. But they didn't clarify. So we have our 0.2 milligrams per kilogram for pain. And then we have a 4 milligram per kilogram for sedation. And there was no, like, they said don't partially disassociate, and then they really didn't clarify what that meant.
Why don't you want to give a milligram per kilogram or 2 milligrams per kilogram, Nick?
Because the K-hole is a wonderful place when you're firmly in there, but it's a terrible place when you're like just the tip is in there.
Just the tip.
So there is really four important dosing ranges. So analgesic dose is 0.1 to 0.3 milligrams per kilogram. Recreational dose is 0.2 to 0.5 milligrams per kilogram. And that's like where you get a little psychedelic and trippy.
Yeah.
Partial disassociation dose. So
the dark zone.
The hardcore freak out. You know you're going into the K-hole, but you don't want to. Is 0.4... to 0.8 milligrams per
kilogram. So I may have slightly fucked up the 1 milligram per kilogram. That's okay. We can cut that out later.
No, we're just going to leave it in. Because you know how you fix it when you're in the sub-disassociative dose of ketamine?
You give more.
Yeah. So if you don't give enough ketamine, just give more ketamine.
It's my favorite solution to anything.
Yeah. Like
just throw more things at the problem.
How many medications is the treatment to a side effect of the medication just to give more of that? medication.
Not many that I can think of.
Yeah, like if someone's having a bad reaction to like fentanyl, whose first response is, well, I'm going to give you more fentanyl?
Probably an idiot's. I mean, like, it would be a good response. If you want to maintain absolute stability or gain absolute stability in the way of causing death, then that certainly is a absolute positive path to take.
Yeah, I mean, it's super easy. And the cool thing about ketamine is it's ridiculously safe.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think though, you know, we should, of course, because if we just sound like we're raving about ketamine the entire time without mentioning any side effects, it's not great. There is one particular side effect that's at least worthy of discussion and worthy of caution. I won't include the discussion of increasing ICP because there's been a couple of studies now that have really disproven that and debunked that. But that being said, there is a known effect of ketamine to elevate the blood pressure. Found here a reference that said the blood pressure elevation will occur shortly after the injection. It'll reach a maximum within a few minutes, and it usually returns to its pre-anesthetic or pre-dissociative values within 15 minutes after injection. It's usually short-lived, but it can increase the blood pressure of the patient by 10 to 50%. So if you've got a person with a blood pressure of 210 over 100, my general recommendation would be to not give ketamine, at least at that particular moment. Also, another worthwhile thing, because it's such a short-acting or short time that the side effect is going to take place, I would not necessarily recommend giving something to bring down the blood pressure, because then you're going to be just kind of chasing your tail with the problem. So don't be giving like a beta blocker or something to that effect to decrease their blood pressure, because after 15 minutes of administration, in the majority of cases, the ketamine is going to have that side effect wear off.
Right. So that's why this is kind of, there's a hard stop on like patient populations over 65. There's a hard stop on people with like significant coronary artery disease, significant history of hypertension. Those kind of contraindications are there because of this this response of hypertension and tachycardia.
Right.
But that being said, is there any other anesthetics that actually help with blood pressure and heart rate?
No.
So if you have a hypotensive, which most of the people we're intubating are hypotensive for one reason or another.
Yeah.
If you have a hypotensive patient, either they are a trauma patient and they're actively exsanguinating, or they are a septic patient, or whatever ails them, literally.
Yeah.
Ketamine is going to boost that blood pressure and boost that heart rate. So if you are doing a pharmacologically assisted airway,
yeah,
that is a very safe way to go compared to even etomidate, which is going to do less for blood pressure and heart rate, but it's certainly not going to boost those.
Right, numbers. Right. I think one of the interesting things also would be like the post-cardiac arrest patient. That's definitely a situation where I could see some pretty viable uses of it. I mean, there should be some caution used, because obviously increased blood pressure is going to be an increased strain on the heart muscle on post-cardiac arrest. So that should be used cautiously, but at the same time, we do have to remain in the perfusing blood pressure zone. So if somebody is truly profoundly hypotensive post-cardiac arrest and we need to intubate them to secure an airway, that may be a good option to look at. Yeah, for sure. I'm trying to remember what I was going to say.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't listened to the smack talk by Ruben Strayer on ketamine, what are you doing? Because they're unquestionably doing a better job than we are just like with life. Ruben Strayer is a like pretty big proponent of using ketamine in the emergency department.
You know, one of my favorite things too, in doing some reading on ketamine, is the fact that you actually maintain your airway reflexes. You'll hear some evidence and some people going towards the delayed sequence inductions in terms of medication facilitated intubation. And basically that is using something such as ketamine that maintains an airway reflex, but produces the dissociative effect. So you can adequately pre-oxygenate your patient prior to an intubation attempt. So you avoid the peri-intubation arrests due to hypoxia.
Especially in Mass and Maine, we don't have DSI, we don't have RSI. Really, there's no real support of pharmacologically assisted intubation.
Right.
So the main dose we're going to be giving is an analgesic dose. And that dose is back at that 0.1 to 0.3 milligrams per kilogram.
Right.
Nice. So this article is from the Annals of Emergency Medicine 2015 in September. Intravenous subdissociative dose ketamine versus morphine for analgesia in the emergency department, a randomized control trial. And basically what they did is they randomized populations to get ketamine at 0.3 mgs per kg or morphine at 0.1 mgs per kg by IV push during 3 to 5 minutes. They were again then evaluated at 15, 30, 60, and 90 minutes. Primary outcome was pain reduction at 30 minutes. This is a small study. Only 45 patients per group were enrolled. The primary change in mean pain scores was not significantly different in the ketamine and morphine groups, 8.6 versus 8.5 at baseline, and 4.1 and 3.9 at 30 minutes. There was no difference in the incidence of rescue fentanyl analgesia at 30 or 60 minutes. No statistically significant or clinically concerning changes in vital signs were observed. No serious adverse events occurred in either group, and the patients in the ketamine group reported increased minor adverse effects at 15 minutes during post-drug administration. So the subdissociative dose of ketamine at 0.3 mg per kg was effective and safe compared to that of IV morphine.
Right.
And with some of the support for moving away from opiates and a lot of the issues we're having with the current opiate epidemic, using ketamine for these patients seems to be a fairly reasonable choice.
Right. I think one of the interesting things is that when you look at dependence, there's a both physical and psychological dependence. Ketamine really doesn't have the physical dependence like an opiate does. Does have, you know, components of psychological dependence, and that's why you would see people that may abuse ketamine. But in reality, an opioid has both the psychological and physical dependence problems. And so that's why a lot of, you know, chronic pain management and even acute pain management is kind of moving in a direction away from opiate administration. I know in Mass as well, we have the option of Toradol now, which is an IV NSAID, which is certainly a nice option. But it's good that we're starting to expand and explore some other options out there for analgesia rather than just throwing a shit ton of fentanyl at the problem. So Nick, you had mentioned that you got the opportunity to give ketamine for the first time a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, so I did get to use this pre-hospitally. It worked okay. The patient that I gave it to was a known opiate misuser, had legitimate pain problems, had significant back problems, had been opiate dependent for a long time. And then, you know, with all the changes going around this opiate epidemic, had his opiates removed from him. So he was in legitimate pain, but I was not going to give him any opiates because we know that he had been abusing those at that point. So I called the doc and asked and basically told him, you know, I can give this guy ketamine or I'll just come bumping down the road and call it good. So he's like, yeah, sure, give him ketamine. And now the dude was very specific in asking for opiates, which is one of the big red flags and why I did not give him opiates. So I had to really coach him through the effects. He wasn't super jazzed that he was not getting his opiates and he was getting ketamine. But after kind of talking him through that, he was okay with it. I started giving it to him. A nice slow IV push. I was going up to 25 milligrams. He was a big dude. It was definitely not that sub-dissociative dark zone. It was definitely in that analgesia zone, especially for someone of his size. And I got about 20 milligrams in, and he stopped having fun. He very quickly, sounds like from what he was describing to me, got to that kind of recreational feeling loopy, fairly doped up, and was not enjoying that portion. So he did, I was aiming to give him 25. I got about 20 milligrams in over a course of a couple minutes. And then he said, you know, no more. I said, okay, that's, he has that right. So I stopped. And then he was rather uncomfortable for a couple minutes. And then you could tell that the analgesia was actually setting in because he went from actively sweating, being uncomfortable, to relaxing. I asked him what his pain scale was at, and he looks at me and says, I do not currently have the mental faculties to assess my pain scale, which to me meant that he was okay.
Yeah, I think we're at the therapeutic range at that point.
Yeah, it's like, you know, with opiates, you wait until they start scratching their nose. When someone no longer has the mental facilities to assess their pain scale, they probably are not that bad. So I gave him the 20, and that pretty much lasted the ride into the hospital, which was like 20 minutes. And then the ER took him over and he had no other major adverse events after that. So it's not a great story because he did have some of that negative reaction to it, but it was effective as an analgesic. I tried to talk him into kind of not resisting the medication because I know I've heard from, you know, Ruben Strayer and a couple other sources that how you go down with ketamine is how you come up. And if you are resisting the effects, it's just, you know, you kind of have to play into that placebo effect. And then when you play into that placebo effect, the medication actually works better.
Gotcha. So it's interesting you say that, because I think also it's important to note that, you know, there are randomized control trials out there that, you know, with placebos involved that have shown positive effects with ketamine. So it's not only the placebo effect, but certainly going into it with the right mindset is part of the issue. And if you expect to have a bad experience with it, you're more likely to come out having a bad experience. So that's interesting. That's a good story. It's not much of a story, but I will say I, as an anesthetic, have received ketamine before. It was in a surgical setting. I was having a surgery, getting my tonsils torn out of my throat, which was awful in every way. And I sound like such a wimp, but I've had like three surgeries in my life, and that was the worst by far. So my 23-year-old self at the time was not a happy camper. Anyways, so apparently the anesthetic they had used in the OR was ketamine. Coming out of a ketamine-induced anesthesia was, how do I put this? Startling, I guess would be the best way. You know, compared to some other medications that I've had for various operations, you know, like when coming out of propofol and things like that, it's a little bit slower, but you feel the effects. You feel slurred and slow. And ketamine was like the stereotypical movie moment of waking up, eyes open, and breath, just a deep breath in. It was interesting. It was an interesting experience. I will say that it's kept me, I believe what happened was it kind of kept me dissociated long enough. So I was out of the immediate post-surgery phase. My pain was well controlled at that point. And they were able to keep my pain controlled with some low dose morphine, which is some of the other things that have been researched as we were poking through stuff, was that the use of ketamine as not only a singular, analgesic agent, but also as an adjunct to opioid administration. The goal being is that if we can give less opioids, then give less opioids. So if we give a lower dose opioid with an adjunct of ketamine, that may be a absolutely viable option. So, I mean, I guess the, you know, as we kind of wrap up and, you know, our discussion, I think some of the takeaways are is that ketamine is overall a fantastic drug for pre-hospital administration for our uses, whether that be analgesia, amnesia, not really amnesia, dissociative effects, or for, you know, a medication facilitated intubation. It truly can be a fantastic medication. We do have to think about it. You know, it is going to increase their blood pressure most likely. So we have to be careful. We're not going to be administering to patients that already have a super high blood pressure or have a condition that could be worsened by a high, you know, by high blood pressure, whether that be a AAA or things to that effect. And so as with everything, have to think about this intelligently, make sure we're using it for the right people and not just giving it out because holy shit, we can give ketamine now. Cause that's a good way to lose it and a good way to not have that opportunity anymore.
But I have a medication.
I know. Right. Just throw everything in the drug box at them. So we have to approach it intelligently. But it is a good option and it's nice to have just another option, in the drug box, you know, even if it's a couple times every year or whatever, that it's truly applicable. I think it's fantastic to have that option.
Yeah. And I do think, especially for, excited delirium and like really combative patients, ketamine is a great agent. You know, I've seen cases where you give someone 5 of midazolam, 5 minutes later, it's not touching them. You give them another 5 of midazolam, and suddenly, you know, the first 5 you gave them finally caught up to them, and now they're at 10 milligrams, and they're just like totally gorked. They're, you know, you're supporting their ventilations, and it's just, it's not what you really want to be doing.
Right.
Whereas ketamine is so, it protects those airway reflexes, and you just, you give 500 milligrams of ketamine and you disassociate them, and that's the worst that happens.
Yeah.
You give someone 1,000 milligrams of ketamine, you know, 2 grams of ketamine, it doesn't matter. They're just going to get disassociated.
Yeah.
They're going to be disassociated for longer, but that gives that, the whatever is causing their excited delirium to catch up with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then there's been some recent literature coming out about use of ketamine with behavioral health for
severe bipolar and things like that. Yeah.
For suicidality and just really, you know, here I'm trying to get to the sauce. The effects of a single dose of intravenous ketamine on suicidal ideation, a systemic review and individual participant data meta-analysis. This is in the American Journal of Psychiatry, volume 175, issue 2, February 1st, 2018. Results. Just skip to it. Ketamine rapidly, within 1 day, reduced suicidal ideation significantly on both the clinician-administered and self-report outcome measures. Effect sizes were moderate to large at all time points after dosing. A sensitivity analysis demonstrated that compared with controlled treatments, ketamine had a significant benefit on the individual's suicide items on the MADRS, the HAM-D, and the QIDS-SR.
Which are depression indexes and suicidal indexes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ketamine's effect on suicidal ideation remained remain significant after adjusting for concurrent changes in severity of depressive syndromes. So ketamine, practically same day, reduces suicidality.
Right.
So on that EXDS, the combative, I'm trying to kill myself and I'm on cocaine,
mm-hmm.
not only are you going to take him down, but you might actually put an end to their suicidal ideations. You just give them a whole bunch of Zen.
Wow, we are just saving the world.
Yeah, 500 milligrams of Zen for everybody. Yes. I think the world would be a better place.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
I do not condone recreational ketamine in an illegal sense. Please do not.
In an illegal sense? If it's a legal sense, it's fine?
Yeah. Like if you have a prescription for ketamine.
All right, then rock on.
Then rock on.
Yeah.
I don't know how you would get a legal prescription for ketamine at home.
I don't know.
But.
I want to be a doctor someday. Anybody need ketamine? Yeah.
My dose is 500 milligrams of ketamine for everybody.
Just daily.
All right. So. We covered the drug profile. We covered dosing.
Mm-hmm.
We covered some of the good stuff that happens, you know, the suicidal effects, the safety profile. We covered some of the bad stuff, the hypertension in high-risk groups. We talked about my little incident with ketamine. We talked about Patrick's little incident with ketamine.
My trip to the K-hole.
Yeah. Into the K-hole. So, yeah, I think that was pretty good.
Yeah, it was not bad.
If you look at our webpage at paramexguide.com, we will have show notes with all of our sauces. And until then, thank you so very much for listening. This is Nick Jackson and Patrick Gazevich with the Paramex Guide to the Galaxy.
Have a good day, everybody. Thank you.
Goodbye.